Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, November 22nd, 2017. The UN's humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan says access to humanitarian aid workers is still a problem.
Most people with whom I spoke expressed their hope to return home. They also expressed that the security situations in the community where they come from are not yet conducive for them to go home in a safe manner.
And officials say IDPs forced to flee camps in Kajukeji need urgent assistance.
If you go there, you can find even young people, young children under tree, no shelter, no blanket, no mosquito net. As a church, you have to be concerned with the people. We need to provide people for the basic needs.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN is developing a humanitarian response plan for 2018 to access people in need throughout South Sudan. The new UN resident humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan says the government needs to protect civilians in the country. Nabil Biaje reports for VOA from Juba.
The UN South Sudan humanitarian coordinator, Alan Nudiho, briefed reporters at the Juba news conference today on the humanitarian situation in South Sudan and the status of the protection of civilians sheltering in UN camps across the country. Nudiho says access remains a challenge despite the recent order by President Salva Kiir to ensure the free and safe movement of humanitarian workers.
Humanitarian response plan is currently being developed to support and guide humanitarian activities in 2018. But to be effective, humanitarian actors need free and consistent access to the people in need. Ensuring 100 humanitarian access is essential to our ability to save lives.
The UN humanitarian coordinator says he's waiting to see the president's order implemented on the ground nationwide. Nudiho says civilians sheltering at UN sites told him they still don't feel it's safe to go home.
The internal displaced people who come to UNMISS and who come to the site managed by UNMISS believe that they face a physical threat, and that's why they come to the UNMISS site to seek protection. Last week, I visited Wau to see the living condition of the approximately 50,000 IDPs living in the town of Wau. While most people with whom I spoke expressed their hope to return home, they also expressed that the security situations in the community where they come from are not yet conducive for them to go home in a safe manner.
Nudiho says the government must do more to protect civilians.
One of UNMISS' main mandate and priority is to protect civilians. It is important that we recognize that the protection of civilians remains the primary responsibility of the government. Our work is to complement the responsibility of the government.
Abu Talib Al-Amin is a manager at a UNMISS protection of civilian site in Wau. He says he and his other colleagues at the camp do not feel safe enough to go back to their homes and accuses government troops of looting their houses.
We will not return to our homes because the government forces do not respect international law. They have broken our doors and windows and looted our homes. We have nothing apart from what we get here at the camp. We will not return home until the international community can guarantee our safety and until peace is restored throughout the country.
Nudiho says UNMISS began drafting a cooperation framework yesterday, which will guide its humanitarian work and cooperation with the government over the next year. He says UN agencies and other aid organizations will do more to help displaced people outside of UN-run camps by providing them with food, clean water, as well as livelihood activities to help them become more self-sufficient. He says the cooperation framework will be finalized by next month. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
A church leader in Kajokeji says nearly 20,000 people, including women and children who fled from deadly clashes 3 weeks ago, are at risk of dying from hunger. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
The IDPs first fled to Kajokeji beginning in July 2016 when fighting broke out in parts of the former Central Equatoria state, including Morobo, Lenya and Yei. Since then, they have been sheltering in camps in Ajio, Kerewa and Logo near the South Sudan-Uganda border. New clashes in late October between the SPLA-IO, National Salvation Front rebels and government forces forced the IDPs to run for their lives again. They have disappeared into the bush along the border between South Sudan and Uganda. A new UN report confirms that intense fighting in Kajokeji forced more than 17,000 IDPs to flee to the new locations, including safe places in Uganda. Speaking by phone from Uganda's northern district of Moyo, the Right Reverend Emmanuel Mure, Bishop of the Kajokeji Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says several clashes between the three warring parties has redisplaced thousands of IDPs, leaving them without access to food or water.
Those who are displaced, they now are panicking and they moved out from their places. And when we interviewed some of them, they said that they do not wish to go to Uganda. They need to stay in their own place. And that's why they did not come to register in the camp.
Bishop Murray denies government accusations that his church provides humanitarian assistance to armed groups in the area.
If you go there, you can find even young people, young children under trees, no shelter, no blanket, no mosquito net, old people, and Latin mothers. So we are not actually feeding people who are, we are not feeding. I also made the National Salvation Front, but I want to make to the public clearly that as a church, we have to be concerned with the people. We need to look into the dignity and the unity of the people. We need to provide people for the basic needs.
Bishop Murray is also urging state and county officials to protect the displaced and facilitate aid workers trying to provide relief aid.
Imagine these people who really try to not to cross Uganda because they love their country, they love South Sudan of their origin. They don't feel like to stay in somebody's country. So these people who are left there, we need to provide them with the basic needs. And I would like to appeal even to the government and to rescue these people. It should not allow only the humanitarian aid to run here and there, but what is important is the security of these people. When they find these people gathering aid, they are gathered somewhere. They have to help these people.
UN OCHA says the security situation in Kajokeji deteriorated further in the last week of October when government forces carried out an offensive on Kimu, Jalimo, Sokare, and Bori villages. Most IDPs staying in camps fled to Uganda. About 2,500 other IDPs, mainly women, children and the elderly, remained displaced at Korijo in Liwolo Payam, about 5 kilometers from the border, according to the UN report. Many IDPs at Korijo say they stayed behind to tend to their livestock. Yei County authorities have also reported high numbers of new arrivals in Lenya and Morobo as a result of the fighting. Dozens of aid workers from 10 humanitarian organizations responding to the needs of the displaced were also forced to suspend operations and relocate due to fighting in the area. UN OCHA officials in Juba could not confirm whether or not the aid agencies have resumed operations in the affected areas. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Zimbabwe's former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is backed by the country's military, will be sworn in as the new president on Friday, the Speaker of the country's parliament announced today. A day after President Mugabe resigned under increasing pressure, the governing ZANU-PF party quickly nominated the 75-year-old Mnangagwa to complete Mugabe's term. New elections are scheduled to be held in August. Mnangagwa returned to Zimbabwe capital Harare from South Africa today. It is the first time he has been seen in public since Mugabe fired him as vice president on November 6th. That move touched off a chain of events that led to the country's first transfer of power since independence in 1980. The military staged a takeover last week, but Mugabe remained in office until yesterday. The military released no details about Mnangagwa or his family. Zimbabweans took to the street yesterday to celebrate the news that longtime leader Robert Mugabe has resigned. Among the cheerful spectators was one South Sudanese student studying at Harare Institute of Technology. Ganiko Bangoye Michael says the streets of Harare were electrified when the announcement was made. He says he was excited witnessing history in making. Bangoye says Zimbabwe should take a lesson from South Sudan and remember that the real work of building the country lies ahead and should not be clouded by the current euphoria.
I could feel the joy in the people. Everyone was happy, and you could actually see that people were really waiting for that moment, because once the news broke, I was moving in a certain car, but what happened is that even the people whom I was with in the car, you could just see how happy they were, screaming. Everyone came out of the house, went to the streets, and they were jubilating. I think it was really a historical day for them. They were really very happy.
Have you ever witnessed anything quite like this?
Yeah, I witnessed it back in South Sudan when we got our independence, 2011. We are also screaming that way. We are happy, and everything was just like it was a new beginning. So to them, it's just like a new beginning, like how I witnessed it back in 2011.
It's remarkable you've been able to witness firsthand two historical events on the continent.
Yeah. I think it's an opportunity for me to witness this, because you never know. When I go back to South Sudan, there will be a time maybe when I will scream again. You never know.
You know, you were only 17 years old when South Sudan got its independence, and since then, a lot has happened in South Sudan. I'm wondering what your advice is to the people of Zimbabwe, being a citizen of South Sudan. What would be your advice to them at this very critical moment?
Yeah, at this moment, I think the only advice probably would be like, yeah, it's time. It's like a stepping stone. They begin with this, but they shouldn't hope that everything's fine. They should now strengthen, like build on how they are going to start on from life from now. How is it going to be? So they need to also be able to, the leaders who are coming, maybe they should be able to take on the stone now. How are they going to roll it? They need to roll it the right way, which the citizens expect. So the jubilation right is there, but they need to foresee this jubilation should continue, meaning that they need to continue. Because what happens is that after jubilation, business resumed on very well today and everyone was happy in the mood. So I think they should keep that spirit, then they'll achieve what they want.
What's your advice to civil society groups and students, even amid the celebrations? What should be their focus right now?
They should be advocating for what they expect. Like if it is education, better education, which they want, these are some of the things they should be telling people who are coming in now, so that these leaders should prioritize them as they come in. Because normally that's what happens. You need to show what you wanted. So I think this is the right time to showcase, so that the leaders can prioritize it. I just felt it, how it is to resolve things peacefully. Everyone enjoys. You see the happiness, no gunshot, but you see people, how people enjoy making. It's not. I'm not saying it's a revolution, but with that change, peaceful change. That's what we want in every country in Africa.
That was Ganiko Bangoye Michael speaking to Ian Bior from Harare. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, immigrant trafficking of Africans in Italy continues at an alarming rate. Find out more when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you handle failure?
When I was sitting for my exam, I failed in geography. I was not happy. But for a short time, I have talked to myself that, hi, what's wrong with you? Are you the only girl who failed in the world?
Failure is like saying you can do it again. Like there is a chance that it can be better.
They said failure is always a way forward to your success. Of course, you know, with failures, it's not that once you fail today, you have to give up immediately. It's giving you that you should even continue to seek, you know, to suffer and make sure that you get what exactly you wanted.
I handle failure by realizing the downfall of a person is not the end of his life, and it's not how much you fall because you must fall one day, but how much you struggle to wake up.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Italian police say they have busted a major international migrant trafficking operation that was moving migrants from Italy to France and other European Union countries. The arrests were made in Latina, a small town south of Rome. The operation appears to have been run by migrants moving other migrants, hiding them in small and dangerous parts of trains. In another development, reporter Justine McKinnon tells VOA's Kim Lewis the French group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, rescued more than 100 people from the Mediterranean Sea this morning.
We don't have too many details yet, but it seems that police have been conducting raids in the town of Latina, which is quite a small town south of Rome on the road to Naples. Police have said that they have made some arrests. They've busted this international trafficking operation that was moving migrants from Italy across the border into France and other EU countries. Now, the operation appears to have been run by migrants who were moving other migrants. I'm not sure of their identity or which country they came from. And they seemed to have a very well-organized operation where they were hiding the migrants in very dangerous areas on the train. Not quite clear, but in compartments that were obviously not passenger carriages, so that their lives were at risk as they were being shipped from one country to the other.
How many people were arrested?
We still don't have the details on that yet, but it's not the first time we've seen this happening in Italy. We've seen other arrests in the past, and we've seen people smugglers arrested as they arrive in Italy trying to hide on vessels where they've been shipping migrants themselves. But this is quite unusual to have such an organised operation come to light where migrants are being moved via trains across the border. We had an arrest in a case on the border up near Ventimiglia where people were shipping migrants inside trucks, but to have such an organised operation involving trains is quite an unusual thing.
And it seems, as you said, it's very dangerous too. I just can't imagine being hidden someplace on a train, not knowing what's going to happen to you.
Yes, we've seen the other area of concern, which is on the Austrian border, the Brenner Pass, that stretch just on the border of Italy and Austria. And Austria has stepped up controls in that area as more migrants are trying to use that train route to move from Italy into Austria and other European countries as well.
And on another subject too, I understand there has been another rescue on the Mediterranean early this morning. Can you tell us about that?
Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, is reporting that over 100 people were rescued in the Mediterranean this morning in collaboration with another NGO ship. They are all believed to be safe. Some of the reporters on board have also been tweeting to say that one third of those rescued were women and that 7 young children were among those rescued. And there were reports of cries of joy as they were rescued and brought on board. And also of concern, there are also also other rescues underway. These vessels are looking to rescue others in the Mediterranean after getting distress calls from other migrants. So it's interesting to see that these migrant ships are still operating in November as the conditions have become much more perilous and the weather has gotten far worse on the Mediterranean.
That was reporter Justin McKinnon speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis from Rome earlier today. In Malawi, pressure is mounting on the government to introduce an electoral reform bill for debate in parliament. The bill proposes several changes to current law as the country prepares to hold elections in 2019. Lamik Masena reports from Blantyre.
Malawi has long used the first-past-the-post electoral system to choose its president. The leading candidate, no matter what the margin, is declared the winner. But reformers want to change that. Among the recommendations, the bill proposes the 50-plus-1 system, which requires a candidate to gain more than half of the vote. The system includes runoffs if none of the candidates gets more than 50%. Analysts say some of the presidents in Malawi have in the past elected with fewer than half of the votes cast. Political scientist Vincent Konrowe says the bill is in line with the principle of majority rule.
In this case, we have a president who is obtained through a minority vote, where 77% of the population did not vote, for example, Peter Mutharika in 2014. So maybe to avoid such kind of scenario, it is very important that by 2019, we should have these electoral reforms in place.
The bill also seeks to delay the swearing-in of the winning presidential candidate and his vice president after 30 days. Under the current law, the winning presidential candidate can be sworn before 30 days. The debate on the proposed legislation was delayed in May. This after Justice Minister Samuel Tembenu told Parliament that he received the recommendations from the Malawi Law Commission late. The minister promised to table the bill in November. However, the legislation was missing from the published agenda for the current session of Parliament, which started last week. Meanwhile, the opposition has threatened to boycott the proceedings should the government fail to introduce the bill for debate. Lazarus Chakwera is the leader of the opposition in the legislature.
They deliberately say it. November would be the time. After having failed in the past, if we don't do it now, it's never going to happen. That's why we have to do it now. And they must bring those reforms now.
Last week, Justice Minister Tembenu told Parliament that the bill will be introduced once it is published in the Gazette in accordance with the laws. He did not mention the exact date. The Malawi Electoral Commission said recently that it will not be able to use the reforms during the 2019 elections unless the bill is passed within 6 months. The country's biggest quasi-religious group, Public Affairs Committee, says it will hold a street march in the capital, Lilongwe, on Thursday and present a petition to President Peter Mutharika to help speed the passing of the electoral reforms. Peter Mulomole is its spokesperson.
And there will be another petition to the Speaker of the House to remind him that as soon as the bill comes in Parliament, it must be a priority because it is in the interest of the nation to have the system that we are practicing now changed.
However, representatives of the Civil Society Platform on Electoral Reforms say that it is wrong to target the proposed electoral reforms for 2019. Jodzi says consultative meetings on the matter did not include members of the general public. Fryson Jodzi is its national coordinator.
We are not making a law for the 2019 elections. We are making a law for Malawi. And this law has to stand the test of time. But if you are saying, let's do this law because 2019 election is coming closer, then we should have started these things 20 years ago.
He says there should be more voter education on the pros and cons of the bill before it is presented in Parliament for debate. However, the Malawi Law Commission says it held consultative meetings with stakeholders in all the country's three regions before they came up with the recommendations in the bill. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Babies are more likely to die in their first few weeks of life if their mothers live close to the site of an oil spill, according to new research. Scientists studied data on the infant mortality and oil spills in Nigeria's Niger Delta region and described their results as shocking. Henry Ridgewell reports.
It's estimated that 240,000 barrels of crude oil are spilled into the Niger Delta every year. The environmental effects are clear to see, waterways running thick with the choking black liquid, suffocated wildlife, dying mangroves. The effect on the people living in the delta is slowly coming to light. The study by scientists at Switzerland's University of St. Gallen is shocking. Babies born in the delta are twice as likely to die in the first month of life if their mothers were living close to an oil spill before they became pregnant. Roland Hodler is lead researcher.
We looked at the birth histories of more than 2,500 Nigerian mothers, and we compared siblings, some conceived before and some conceived after a nearby oil spill.
The researchers compared geographical data on 6,600 recent oil spills with results from the 2013 National Demographic and Health Survey. Their results show that even spills that happened 5 years before conception doubled the chances of babies dying after birth. However, spills that happened during pregnancy appear to have little effect.
We think the main reason is that some of the negative health effects are just building up over time. So if you think about these negative health effects, these are due to skin contact with crude oil or to drinking contaminated water or eating contaminated fish or crops and also inhaling smoke from fires.
It's thought unborn and newborn infants are more vulnerable as they haven't built up natural defences. The study suggests the effects of oil spills will be felt long into the future. In 2015, the Anglo-Dutch oil giant Shell agreed to share the costs of the clean-up, an operation that the United Nations says will take 30 years. Critics say only a fraction of the money has been paid. Shell blames oil thieves for causing many of the spills. The Nigerian government did not respond to requests for comment. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
That's all we have for today. We now leave you with the song Kali Balkon by Freedom Boys. We have been listening to the Juba-based Freedom Boys with the song Kali Balkon. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to hear what you think about the show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page. That's South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.